Chapter 68.
Ladybird in 20 minutes, Mr. Courtney. The conductor put his head around the door of the compartment. Thanks, Jack. Sean looked up from his book. I see from this morning's paper that you're engaged to be married.
That's right.
Well then, break clean, no hitting low. Let's have a good clean fight and good luck to both of you.
Sean grinned, and the man went down the passage. Sean packed his book into the briefcase, stood up and followed him. On the balcony of the coach, he stopped and lit a cheroot. Then he leaned on the railings and looked out across the veldt for his first glimpse of Lioncop. This had become a ritual whenever he returned to Ladyburg. This morning he was as happily content as he had ever been in his life. Last night, after conferring with Ma and Pa Goldberg, Ruth had set the wedding date for March next year. By then, Sean would have completed his first cutting of bark, and they would take a month to honeymoon in the Cape. Now, at last, I have everything a man could reasonably ask for, he thought, and smiled. And in that moment he saw the smoke. He straightened up and flicked the cheroot away. The train snaked up towards the rim of the escarpment, slowing as the gradient changed beneath it. It reached the crest, and the whole vista of the Ladyburg Valley opened before it. Sean saw the great irregular blot upon his trees, with the thin grey streams of smoke drifting wearily away across the hills. He opened the balcony gate and jumped down from the train. He hit and slid and rolled down the gravel embankment. The skin was scraped from his knees and the palms of his hands. And then he was on his feet, running. Along the road where the fire had been stopped, men waited. Sitting quietly or sprawled in exhausted sleep, all of them were coated with ash and soot. Their eyes were smoke-inflamed and their bodies ached with fatigue. But they waited while the black acres smouldered and smoked sullenly. For if the wind came up again, it would fan the ashes to life. Ken Broster lifted his head from his arm and then sat up quickly.
"Sean's here," he said.
The men around him stirred and then stood up slowly. They watched Sean approaching. He came with the sloppy, blundering legs of a man who has run 5 miles. Sean stopped a little way off, and his breathing wheezed and heaved in his throat.
How did it happen?
We don't know, Sean.
In sympathy, Ken Broster dropped his eyes from Sean's face.
You do not stare at a man in anguish.
Sean leaned against one of the wagons. He could not bring himself to look again at the vast expanse of smouldering desert, with the skeletons of the tree trunks standing out like the twisted and blackened fingers of an arthritic hand.
One of your men was killed, Ken told him softly. One of your Zulus.
He hesitated, but then went on firmly.
Others were hurt, badly burned.
Sean made no reply. He did not seem to understand the words.
Your nephew and your boy, Durkee.
Still Sean stared at him dully.
Imbijani also.
This time Sean seemed to cringe away from him.
I sent them down to the homestead, the doctors there.
Still no reply from Sean. But now he wiped the palm of his hand across his mouth and eyes.
Mike and Dirk aren't too bad. Skin burns. But Imbijani's feet are in a hell of a mess.
Ken Broster spoke quickly now.
Young Dirk got trapped in front of the flames. Mike and Imbijani went to get him. Surrounded, down, picked him up, tried to help. Useless, badly burned. Meat off his feet.
To Sean, the words were disjointed, meaningless. He leaned against the wagon. There was looseness in him, a lack of will. It was too much.
Let it go. Let it all go. Sean, are you all right?
Broster's hands on his shoulders. He straightened up and looked around him again.
I must go to them. Lend me a horse. You go ahead, Sean. We'll stay on here and watch it for you. Don't worry about it. We'll make bloody sure she doesn't start again. Thank you, Ken.
Then he looked around the circle of anxious, compassionate faces.
Thank you, he said again.
Sean rode slowly into the stable yard on Lioncop. There were many carriages and servants, black women and children, but a hush came upon them when they recognized him. Surrounded by women, a crude litter lay near the far wall of the yard, and Sean walked across to it.
I see you, Imbijani.
Nkosi.
Imbijani's eyelashes were burned away, giving his face a bland and slightly puzzled expression. His hands and his feet were bound loosely in bundles of crisp white bandages, through which ointment had soaked in yellow patches. Sean squatted behind him. He could not speak. He reached out almost hesitantly and touched Impijani's shoulder.
"Is it bad?" he asked then. "No, Nkosi. It is not too bad. My wives have come for me. I will return when I am ready."
They spoke together a little while, and Impijani told him of Dirk and how Michael had come. Then he murmured,
"This woman is the wife of the one who died."
Sean noticed her for the first time. She sat alone in the crowded yard on a blanket against the wall. A child stood beside her, leaning forward, naked, holding one of her fat black breasts with both hands as he fed from it. She sat impassively with her legs folded under her, a cloak of ochre-dyed leather draped loosely over her shoulders, but open at the front for the child. Sean moved across to her. The child watched him with large dark eyes, but without removing the nipple from his mouth, and the corners of his mouth were wet with spilled milk.
"He was a man," Sean greeted the woman. She inclined her head gravely. "He was a man," she agreed. "Where will you go?" Sean asked. "To my father's kraal." The high headdress of red clay enhanced the quiet dignity of her reply. "Select 20 head of cattle from my herds to take with you."
"Ngiyabonga."
"I praise you, Nkosi."
"Go in peace."
"Stay in peace."
She stood, lifted the child onto her hip, and walked slowly from the yard without looking back.
"I will go now, Nkosi,"
Impijani spoke from the litter. The color of his skin was gray with pain.
"And when I return, we will plant again. It was only a small fire."
"It was only a small fire," Sean nodded. "Go in peace, my friend. Drink much beer and grow fat. I will visit you." Impijani chuckled softly and signaled his wives to their places around the litter. They lifted him, young women strong from their work in the fields.
"Stay in peace, Nkosi."
Impijani lay back painfully upon the soft mattress of fur, and they carried him out of the yard. They began to sing as they passed the gates, moving in double file on each side of the litter, stately and tall, their naked backs glistening with oil, rumps swaying together beneath the brief loincloths, and their voices joined high and proud in the ancient song of welcome to the warrior returned from battle. Gathered on the stoop of Lion Kop were many of his neighbours and their wives, come with sympathy and offers of assistance. Ada was waiting for him as Sean climbed the steps.
"Dirk?" he asked.
"He is well, asleep now. Laudanum."
"Michael?"
"He's waiting for you. He refused the drug. I've put him in your room." On his way down the passage, Sean stopped at Dirk's room and looked in. Dirk lay on his back with bandaged hands folded across his chest. His face was swollen and laced with ugly red lines where the wattle branches had clawed him. On the chair beside his bed, Mary sat in patient vigil. She looked at Sean and made to rise. Sean shook his head.
"No, I'll come back when he's awake."
He went on down the passage to his own room. Three of Ada's girls hovered and chirped about Michael's bed like birds whose nests are endangered. They saw him and stopped their chatter. All Ada's girls held Sean in unexplained awe.
"Oh, Mr. Courtney, his poor hands," one little lass began, then blushed crimson, dropped a hurried curtsy, and escaped from the room.
The others followed quickly. Sean moved across to the bed.
"Hello, Mike."
His voice was gruff as he saw the blister that hung like a pale grape on Michael's cheek.
"Hello, Uncle Sean."
The raw places of his face and lips were smeared with yellow ointment. Sean sat down gingerly on the edge of the bed.
"Thank you, Michael," he said.